evening, basketball fans, and welcome to another edition of the Trojan Hoopcast. I'm Keith DeMolder here on the Daily Trojan Sports Network. This is the third podcast of the year, the first regular season podcast. And despite all of the off-season speculations and expectations, the Trojans are in fact 2-0 and looking forward to a big road trip on to Tennessee to take on the Vanderbilt Commodores. Once again, we'd just like to thank you for joining us all season long and all podcast long talking about Trojan hoops here on SoundCloud. And what a wild week it has been for sure. Some things cemented within the Trojan program despite all of the off-season allegations with the Tony Bland scandal, Player 8, Player 9, named in the FBI report. So we're going to get into that a little bit. But the reason for this Week 3 pod is to talk about Vanderbilt, to talk about USC's chances in that game, but also to recap the previous games against Cal State Fullerton and against North Dakota State. So without further ado, let's talk about that huge win against the Titans. In the season opener, the Trojans roll to a 42-point victory over Cal State Fullerton, 84-42, and calling that game, it was fantastic considering how many different players on the team got minutes and good minutes against a very talented Cal State Fullerton team that really did not play up to its potential. I can tell you that much. Looking at Fullerton in the offseason, they had a huge game against Laverne. Laverne, obviously not a great opponent, but this Fullerton team is certainly talented. A lot of experience for sure. They lost a couple of big guys from last year, but most of their players, most of their guards weren't hitting their shots at all. And it wasn't a fact of, them being, you know, out-rebounded outstandingly. I mean, they had 44 boards, including 16 offensive rebounds, but it was just an inability to make their shots and more of a lineup game, more so in the fact that they played some guards, you know, ran with a guard-heavy lineup versus a very loaded Trojan offense that includes 2 6-foot-11 guys in Chimezie Metu and Benny Boatwright. So it's hard to compete against bigs like that when you're playing four guards. That said, let's just look at the Fullerton side. By half, they knew it was essentially over, really. It was 42-15, and the team was just shooting abysmal. Looking at the final totals, though, Jackson Rowe was a highlight. He led the team, folks, with 12 points. Not what you want to see out of your ball club, you know, a forward, a sophomore leading the team. He went 5-10 from the floor, 2-3 from deep downtown. 8 rebounds also led the team, and he had 2 steals. So Jackson Rowe, watch out for him in the Big West. He is a great talent for them. He is so phenomenal offensively and defensively. He can truly do it all. But what we saw, though, was shooting struggles from everybody. It wasn't even just, you know, their star guard, Kyle Allman Jr., but it was everybody. On the night, the team shot Cal State Fullerton 14 of 60 for 23%. Even worse from outside, 2 of 19. Jackson Rowe made 2 of 3. So that means that every single player combined 0 for 16 from beyond the arc. Just abysmal. No positives really to take away offensively. Not even any ball movement. Only 4 assists for the entire team. So a lot of the shots they made at the line, and also from, you know, guys just taking the ball up off of steals. Looking at their shot percentage from the line, that was horrible as well. 12 of 29 from the line all night, 41%. So this offense for Cal State Fullerton just wasn't what it could have been. I don't think I've seen a worst shooting percentage in a game ever. It was at the D1 level. It was abysmal to say the least. Kyle Allman, usually so good, 1 of 11. And then 3 of 6 from the line. So very discouraging for Cal State Fullerton to not show up the way they did. And Arkeem Robinson, he had 4 personal fouls on the night, so they're trying to keep him out of foul trouble. But given his size, he's a big body, 6'9", 240 essentially. And they didn't want to roll with him. They wanted to roll with a smaller lineup. And you got to think that you know, not going with big men against guys like Chimezie Metu and Benny Boatwright on the other side, it probably didn't really serve them well. I think that Rowe was a for sure starter in that game, but you had bigs like Johnny Wang, Josh Pitts, those freshmen that came off the bench really late in the game. They only got 8 minutes apiece, so Fullerton, they're probably gonna try and tweak that going forward. But looking over at USC now, it was an offensive just onslaught from the start of the game, really. Whether it was Benny Boatwright hitting his shots, he had 13 on the game, 4 of 10, excuse me, from the field, 2 of 6 from deep downtown. Benny, third on the team in scoring with 13. But then we also saw Chimezie Metu come out, and he had a fantastic game. 7 of 14 from the field. And then he hit 2 of his 2 3-point shots. It was unbelievable to see him hit from outside, 2 of 2 from the line, 10 rebounds. He had his first double-double of the season, more likely not to be his last, 2 blocks as well. And what we saw, too, was Benny Boatwright getting on the defensive action, 3 blocks. So fantastic numbers from both of those forwards. Jonah Matthews got the start. We'll get to that in a little bit, why he was starting. 3 of 9 from the field, 1 of 4 from deep, 4 of 5 from the line. So he had a decent game. Not amazing, but he had a decent game. Jordan McLaughlin, amazing as always. 5 of 9 from the field. 3 steals, 6 assists, 6 rebounds, a block, and 12 points. A stat sheet stuffer, as they say. Fantastic performance from the senior guard. And then Elijah Stewart, pretty quiet. 6 points off of 2 of 5 shooting and a made 3-pointer. Looking at the bench, though, that's what we like to see. We like to see these guys coming off the bench. And a big factor in that win was Derek Thornton. Finally, we got to see him play. A lot of speculation. Is he going to be as good as we thought he was? You know, was it worth the time to try and go out to Duke to get him? And let me tell you, folks, it was. In that game especially, 4 of 9 from the field, 3 of 4 from deep downtown. He's got a fantastic shot, great handle, really sure ball handler. We talked to him in practice, just saying how he beefed up. He gained about 25 pounds. He said, gained a lot of muscle, and that's given him the confidence to try and go inside and to make sure to not have, not be easily challenged by defenders. So 11 points on the night, great game from him. He had a steal, 4 rebounds, great game all around. Shaquan Aaron, also a big factor, 7 points for him. Rakosevic, not much of a score, but he came in and gave some quality minutes. We saw Chuck O'Bannon. We saw Jordan Usher used a lot. We saw Usher and Shaquan Aaron almost, mixed and matched because they're both 6'7", but Usher's, he's a bigger guy. He brings a lot more in terms of physicality. But overall, a great game for USC. They shot the lights out, 41% from deep downtown, 72% from the line, so much improved. Benny Boatwright, though, not hitting the shots that we'd like to see him hitting. He, as we said, 34 straight makes from the line, one of the best percentages in all college basketball last year. And he went 3 of 6 from the line, so maybe something off with his shot form. But needless to say, great win, a great home win, and the home opener, USC showing its offensive prowess, no doubt about it. But looking over to the starting lineup, we mentioned earlier, Jonah Matthews, usually not a starter, usually a first guy off the bench type of deal. But there was official word given from the USC basketball team regarding some of these allegations that surrounded the program. D'Anthony Melton not even suiting up at all for the game. Not even, coming off the bench at any capacity. He was sitting. He was in his street clothes. So a lot of speculation as to, is D'Anthony Melton going to play this year? Is he the guy? Is he player 8? We can't say for sure right now. We don't. We can't say either or. That's we're not going to break any news here, but. In that game, he looked like, maybe he could start, maybe he wasn't, but, according to USC Hoops, they released a message on Twitter, basically saying that we're going to take all precautions necessary, to make sure that, we know if D'Anthony's eligible, because we don't want any ineligibility concerns, because if he indeed is ineligible, then perhaps USC's wins are taken away. There could be something about, say if it comes out later that he is ineligible, that any tournament run could be negated, banners come down, that sort of thing. So not what you want from your team to have to deal with that sort of scenario. But that's kind of what happened. And here's the official statement from USC Hoops. They posted this on Twitter just before the game started. So let me just read you a little excerpt right here. So let's take a moment first to read what they said. So here's what USC Hoops said on Twitter. As a precaution, De'Anthony Melton is being held out due to a potential issue regarding eligibility. De'Anthony is a valued member of the USC community, and USC is working diligently to independently investigate this matter in order to confirm that De'Anthony meets the NCAA requirements for eligibility. So clearly USC, they didn't want to take any chances with this one. So sitting out, indefinitely at this point. USC rolling with Jonah Matthews instead of Melton, and that's huge. It changed the game for sure. Obviously, Cal State Fullerton, when you're not hitting shots, there's not really much you can do, but it certainly came in a factor in last game against North Dakota State, and let's get into that right now. So USC hosting North Dakota State. North Dakota State, kind of an unknown. We talked about in the pod last week how it's North Dakota State was a team that, you know, they could really give USC a run for its money. They're a huge lineup, big guys that are really, really good. They can hit shots. They pass the ball. They're unselfish. And we saw it, against the Trojans. They almost came out and beat them. Let's take a look at some of their numbers that night. So at the half, it was very tight. North Dakota State was doing great offensively. Benny Boatwright and Elijah Stewart were two of the main guys for USC in the first half. Hardly any of the other players were hitting shots, and North Dakota State was really working their magic. 33-33 at the half. We saw Jordan McLaughlin with a nice underhanded layup buzzer beater at the end of the half to put it to 33-all. Jordan McLaughlin, he always has these buzzer beaters at the end of the half. We saw one against Cal, that sort of thing. He just kind of does that. He's of course one of the better guards in the nation, and also the leader of this team. So for North Dakota State, what we saw was really balanced play from their bench, but also from their starters. So the main guys that we were looking for was Paul Miller, their 6'6" guard, senior leader on that team for sure, a guy that can take over a game, and then also Tyson Ward, a sophomore guard, 6'6", another guy that we mentioned in the mix that could be a huge factor for them. AJ Jacobson and Jared Samuelson, two other guys that are great scores for them. But Miller didn't really have that great of a game per se. Just 7 points, 2 of 12 from shooting, 1 of 8 from downtown. So not really the greatest shooter, but he contributed in other ways. 4 rebounds, 3 assists, a steal, and looking at Ward. Ward was a little bit more polished offensively, 3 of 10, 7 points to his name, but he also led the team 5 assists and led the team with 8 rebounds. But a guy that just really started to take over in that game for North Dakota State was their guard, Cameron Hunter, the freshman from Olathe, Kansas. Nobody really knew about him. We didn't really highlight him that much because we didn't really know about him. But he came off the bench huge in that game. 8 of 11, 4 of 5 from deep, 24 points. He just simply could not be stopped. 4 of 5 from the line as well. So he was their big factor, and USC just simply did not have an answer for him. Didn't really have an answer for that 3-point shooting Bison offense, 10 of 29. Towards the end of the game, they started to miss more shots. Samuelson hit 3 of his 7, but overall, North Dakota State, we saw this in the second half mainly, the start of the second half, where what North Dakota State was doing, USC was rolling a zone defense. And so when you roll a zone, you're very susceptible to that 3 shot because you're rolling a zone, you're not going to play man, you're not going to play as tight, but it protects the basket because North Dakota State, they have a bigger lineup, so therefore you have to protect the basket. But what happened was when you have shooters like that that can get past the zone, we saw 3 straight 3-pointers from the Bison. It was unreal. USC rolling with the zone, and then what happened was the Bison just used a lot of movement. They moved players around. They set screens for each other, and rolling off screens, you have that open shot more than 10 times out of 10 you're going to make it, and they did. And Hunter was just firing all night hitting. It was crazy to see play from a freshman like that. So say at least, you know, it was a 10-point win for the Trojans. It was a 10-point win through and through. But, you know, and that's what some, you know, some of the people surrounding the program will say, you know, it's a win. But looking at the players after the game, looking at Chimezie Metu's face after the game, he was – these guys were not happy with their performance because that could have easily been a loss. You know, it was tied to half, and things could have gone the Bison's way. But thankfully, we had some step-up play from one of our biggest scorers, that being Benny Boatwright. He came in and was fantastic. Great game. 10 of 17, led the team 28 points, and it was a career high for him. And he's a guy that can score a lot of points for sure. 10 of 17, mostly from inside, a lot of dunks. Some, you know, fadeaway jumpers, but a lot of inside play. 7 of 10 from the line as well. 8 rebounds, an assist, and 3 blocks. So we're seeing Benny Boatwright being a lot more aggressive defensively. He had 3 blocks in that Fullerton game, but also 3 blocks in this game against North Dakota State. And having him be a guy who can block shots is going to be really valuable for this team, especially come, you know, towards Pac-12 play when they're playing against bigger opponents, guys who are going to be 6'10", 6'11", on the regular. Looking more at the stat sheet, though, it was a big night for the starters. Chimezie Metu, 6 of 11, 14 points. Jonah Matthews, not as great. He had he and Elijah Stewart kind of flopped roles. Matthews went 2 of 5, 1 of 2 from deep, just 6 points on the night. He had 2 steals, though, an assist and 4 rebounds. So he had a good game defensively. Jordan McLaughlin, great as ever, 12 points, 4 of 10 from the field, 4 assists, 2 steals, a block, and 8 rebounds. So he almost had a double-double himself, but only, you know, just 2 rebounds shy. Elijah Stewart, 2 of 5 from deep, but 3 of 10 from the field, only hitting 1 of his 5 two-point shots attempted. So he's had some shooting woes as of late. Probably will look to rectify that playing Vanderbilt this upcoming week. 6 rebounds, an assist, 10 points. So when you have 4 guys in the starting lineup going for double figures, it's exactly what you like to see. Looking at the bench, though, a much smaller bench in this game. Shaquan Aaron earning most of that bench time, 17 minutes, 2 points. Derek Thorne had a bit of an off-night shooting, 1 of 4, just 2 points. So kind of a juxtaposition of sorts there. You know, Andy Enfield rolling with Thorne a lot and Shaquan Aaron, and then, you know, bringing in guys like Chuck O'Bannon against Fullerton, you know, something you can do when you have such a hard, you know, huge lead. But against North Dakota State, they weren't pulling any punches. They were giving USC all that they had. So you had to roll with McLaughlin. You had to roll with Boatwright. You had to roll with Metu for a majority of the game. Kosovic only had 1 minute. He only played 1 minute in the entire game. So just goes to show you that Metu and Boatwright, they have a lot on their shoulders, a lot of responsibility, no doubt. And something that, you know, to take away in talking about the scandal is that losing, at least for the moment, losing D'Anthony Melton has consequences. It has consequences for sure, as we talked about in podcasts previous, is the fact that he is such a good defender that losing his defensive ability changes this team. Because Jonah Matthews, he's a good defender as well. He's, you know, he can pick your pocket at any time. But if you're looking for a guy to block shots and to rebound well, that's D'Anthony Melton. And D'Anthony Melton, I'm sure he's hungry. He's absolutely hungry to get back on the court. But ineligibility, it's a concern for sure. And it affects the entire team, not just himself. So probably better that USC is sitting him. So that's the recap from those two games. 2 straight wins, but some concerns for this program going forward. That said, let's talk about these games this week, specifically the Vanderbilt Commodores. USC going into Tennessee to play Vanderbilt on Sunday. Let's get into it. So taking a look at the Commodores, they are 1-1. They're technically first in the Southeastern Conference because, well, not many teams have played many games, but right now they are 1-1. They've won their first contest against Austin, PA, 73-54. Nice win there. But then they dropped their recent Monday game against Belmont. Belmont with a 69-60 victory. And some people are calling it upset, but Belmont, a very talented team for sure. And what's interesting is how they won without the three ball. They shot 6 of 27. But what they were able to do was get to the line early. 19 of 26 from the line. So they were able to convert their free throw opportunities. Big games from Windler and Egekezi. Huge games from them, 24 and 22 respectively. But then looking at this Vanderbilt team, they had, you talk about a bad shooting night for the Bruins. The Commodores had a horrible shooting night themselves. 4 of 23 from three-point range. Not very good if you're a Vanderbilt team that's going to try and convert from the outside. Their main guys that they like to rely on, if we're talking offensively, Jeff Robertson, Sabin Lee, Riley LaChance, those are their main guys. And LaChance, he was good from the field, 4 of 9 on the night, but 1 of 5 from deep, so they're going to need him to kind of step it up from outside. He had 10 on the game, and then Robertson, 3 of 7, 1 of 4 from deep, also 6 of 6 from the line, so he can convert. A big player for sure, 12 rebounds, he's their main rebounding threat. Lee from the bench, 5 of 9, 1 of 4 from deep. He had 8 rebounds as well. So this team, it's a mixed bag. I mean, Roberson, he's the main guy down low. He'll be the guy that's going to take you far in terms of being able to rebound. He's the guy that's going to get a lot of minutes. And I mean, it makes sense. He's a big body, 6'6", 220. He's kind of a tweener guy. He likes to play more of the forward role, though, you know, kind of like a Draymond Green type of player. That said, this is a team that got beat by a lower division team in Belmont, and so it's kind of surprising that ESPN is, or at least the nation is predicting that Vanderbilt is actually the favorite. Right now the matchup says that 73.5% that Vanderbilt is going to win, compared to 26.5% that USC is going to win, which in my opinion, drastically off. USC, much more offensive firepower. I believe that, you know, Roberson, he can only do so much. Benny Bowright, as he mentioned, it's a two-headed monster with those guys because they can rebound, but more importantly, they can score and they can shoot from the outside. That is the main difference. Surely Vanderbilt, they have big players. They have a couple 6'10 guys in Yanni Wetzel and, Desiree Baptiste. Ejike Obinna, all 6'10", but they don't have a lot of size if we're talking about their forwards and guards. I mean, when you have Roberson, 6'6", 220, he's a big guy, but their guards are decently small. LaChance, 6'2", 185. Sabin Lee, 6'2", 174. You know, some of these other guys, Max Evans, 6'2", 186. So when you're relying on guys, on guards, a lot, you know, guard heavy, your game gets a little bit predictable. And I think that's what Belmont saw, is that, you know, Larry Austin Jr. started for them as well. You know, although 10 minutes, you know, a starter nevertheless, 6'2", 182, is that you can then afford to play man because anybody who's going to try and go inside is going to be swatted away, easily. And USC, Benny Boatwright starting coming into his own blocking shots. And you know, Chimezie is certainly going to be almost like a middle blocker in volleyball, and the way that he punts, you know, spikes the ball, out of bounds with his thunderous blocks. I see USC winning this one all the way. I don't know why they're considering Vanderbilt to be the favorite. I think that obviously this mountain thing is not what you want from a team, and also home field advantage is a big deal. But here's also something that USC has a winning chance in, is the fact that, you know, certainly USC is going on the road and they're going to be tired from flights, things like that. But Vanderbilt is also playing Friday at home against UNC Asheville, so maybe they're going to be a little bit tired. USC hasn't had a game since North Dakota State. Obviously, that one was pretty draining for USC and having to try and come back from being down. But USC, they're going to have a lot more rest. They're going to go into Nashville, obviously, you know, harsh territory, but they're coming in as the number 10 team in the nation. This is a team that's favored, should be favored, and ultimately I believe it's going to win this game. They're going to win by how much? That's the question. North Dakota State, a team right now that's 0-2 on the year, and USC didn't really beat them by as much as they could have. Obviously, it's a 10-point win, and they came on late. Yeah, Shaquan Aaron dunked to really seal it. And, you know, North Dakota State, of course, they did lose pretty handily at UCSB, but I guess that's kind of the point, is that you can't really take any opponent for granted. And USC probably, saw that big loss to UCSB by North Dakota State, got a little complacent. So they're going to go into Vanderbilt, and maybe that's going to light their fire. Maybe the fact that people aren't expecting them to be good, it's going to light their fire. Regardless of that fact, I think that USC, looking at their schedule, looking ahead a little bit, not trying to get too ahead of ourselves, but that number 16 Texas A&M team is looking good. They're likely to win. They're playing a game right now, and they're winning handily over UCSB 31-16. As of right now, this podcast is being recorded. They're probably going to win that game, but they're coming in. So Texas A&M is going to come into Galen Center and play USC a week from this Sunday, and that's going to be the biggest test of the offseason. Maybe SMU, maybe Oklahoma, but Texas A&M, this is a national team that has a chance to go all the way. So USC is really going to be preparing for that. And I think that this Vanderbilt game is going to be a test to see not just how USC fares on the road, but how does USC fare against a title contender? Vanderbilt, we saw them, kind of sneak into the tourney last year, and they made some noise, but I think that everybody is, has USC's number right now. They think they're illegitimate. They don't think they're legitimate. They don't think that this team's going to go far, but I think they could. I think that this game against Vanderbilt, if they win handily, will show that, we're putting our past behind us. We don't care about that North Dakota State game. We won by 10. We can go on the road and we can win. So it'll be up to this offense, to really come together and mesh well. But I think even more so, I think that, as we talked about last week and the week before, there's some defensive concerns, some concerns on the defensive side of the ball, whether that's missing assignments, these screens. We saw three straight three-pointers almost in the same spot. USC couldn't defend three ball for a short time there, and obviously they were able to adjust and to stop North Dakota State. But imagine if, they hadn't been able to. Imagine if their offense wasn't humming the way that, imagine if Benny Boatwright wasn't hitting his shots the way he was. He was, on another level in that game. So I think that defensively, that's USC's weakness, is the fact that on the outside, they're a little lackadaisical. They play the zone, which obviously helps. But when you have two guys like Boatwright and Metu able to swat away and, kind of pressure guys defensively, I don't know if a zone is necessarily effective, but when you run a transition based offense, that's kind of the defense you have to play. Always ready to just get out and transition, get quick buckets, get the three, get that, the pass, and then the quick three, try and catch, the defense off guard. But it's hard. It's hard when you have good shooting teams that are able to punish you from outside. So we'll see if the Commodores can indeed do that. Thus far this season, it's been kind of a mixed bag. Against Belmont, they were not that great. In their other game this year, my apologies, they were able to hit. That game, of course, against a lesser Austin PA team, and we've seen them try and squeeze their way into the tourney, but Vanderbilt, they went off. Huge games from Roberson, 13 points. Also, Brown, 13 points as well. We saw a great game from LaChance, 4 of 10 from the field, but 3 of 6 from deep. Roberson, 2 of 6 from downtown. As a team, they hit 9 three-pointers, 36%. Pretty good percentage, if you ask me. And then also Lee with a great game of assisting. 7 assists. They had great ball movement. 17 assists as a team. So if this team can get hot and if they move the ball the way that they like to roll with a lot of different guys. It's not just one guy. Obviously, Roberson, he's going to be a guy that's going to play all game long. just because it was a rebounding ability, but they like to roll with different sets and different lineups. And if USC, they can just make sure to, you know, play their defense, to play their system, to not get discombobulated with the fact, oh, now it's number 13 and now number 12. It all comes down to defense. Obviously not having Melton there is going to be a struggle, but, I have a lot of faith in Matthews. I have a lot of faith in Thornton as well. Thornton's impressed me a lot. His maturity, the fact that he always stays very cool on the court, really shows me that he's ready for the big time. He's ready to take this team far. Also, Jordan McLaughlin, a guy that defensively people don't really recognize. They don't see him as a guy that's really good, but he's able to pick up boards. He's able to be present, in that offense. So we'll see what happens come Sunday, but that's going to do it here for this week 3 podcast. Next podcast, we'll have a Vanderbilt wrap up and then a preview of Lehigh and also a big preview of Texas A&M. That'll be a majority of the show. We'll just be talking about Texas A&M, what they bring to the table. We'll bring you some comments, some reactions, and of course, we're going to be having some special guests on the show from the Daily Trojan's own sports department. So make sure to tune in next week for the Daily Trojan. I'm Keith DeMolder saying so long and fight on.